now and finish up the studies that we had on the book of Genesis. We're looking at the things that have to do with ancestry of Jesus Christ. It is so important to recognize the theme of the Bible. I'm trying to pull this out as we go through. The theme on the Bible is the resurrection of Jesus Christ and salvation. And of course, we have the first hint of that plan of redemption in Genesis 3:15, and the fact that the seed of woman was going to defeat the devil, Satan. And we've been looking at this, and I recognize that there are many detours in the Bible. And because of the detours, we sometimes forget the theme of redemption that goes all the way through the Bible from beginning to end. So we get in the genealogies now of Jesus Christ, and that's very important. When you come to Matthew chapter 1, Matthew, by inspiration, gives the lineage of Jesus Christ down through David. Talks about the different generations from one generation to the next. And in the process of looking at the lives of these individuals, such as we're tonight going to look at Isaac, we sometimes get involved in the details of his life and we forget the theme. But please try to keep the theme in your life that all the way through the Bible, God is developing the plan of redemption. And he's chosen the descendants of Abraham in order that they're going to bring Jesus Christ into the world. He made three promises to Abraham that's now being repeated, Abraham, Isaac, and then later Jacob, who was called Israel. And those three promises, first of all, the land promise. When he told Abraham to leave Ur of Chaldees, he was going to give him a land that he didn't know where he was going. But when he got there, he said, "This is going to be your land. I'm going to give it to you in due time." And then he made the promise that there would be many people that come from him. He would be a mighty nation of people. And this is coming to pass as we look at the descendants now of Abraham. The final one, of course, was the seed promise through whom Jesus Christ would come. And he told Abraham that through this seed, all the families of the earth would be blessed. We've come down now to the time of Isaac's birth. When Abraham was 99 years old, God confirmed the promise that next year he would have a son. And of course, this was something that was beyond human ability to do. Isaac was born. If you want to look at the book of Genesis, we're in the book of Genesis, chapter 21. And we'll be reading a number of passages tonight. And I urge you to have your Bibles open and read with me as we look at some of these issues that we find throughout the lives of these patriarchs. Isaac was born, and Abram's name was changed to Abraham, and Sarai's was changed to Sarah. And there was a reason behind that, as he was beginning to fulfill the promise to them. Then in chapter 22, Abraham's faith is tested. And you see this in chapter 22 as it has to do with God's command for him to go and offer his only begotten son upon the altar as a burnt offering. This was a test of his faith. Many, many people in those times did offer their children as sacrifice. We've studied some about the idol Balaam, how Balaam was a great big thing with an open belly. They'd build a fire in that, then toss their children into that fire and offer them as a sacrifice to the gods. Well, Abraham was a believer in God, but he was not one of those that were doing that. And so as faith is being tested, verse 1 of chapter 22, "It came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham, and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. Then he said, Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, offer them as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I shall tell you." Let me pause just a moment. If you look back on the back wall, there's a drawing of the temple. But when you go to the top, you'll notice that there's a big rock or a mountain. That's where Abraham offered Isaac. Then later on that same mountain, Solomon built his temple. And then Herod built his temple after Solomon's temple was destroyed. And today there stands a Muslim mosque on the location where Abraham offered Isaac. And so there's some continuity in the location of that you might want to look at that sometime and go through. And so Abraham took his son and went to the mountain. In verse 9, "Then they came to the place which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. He bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood." Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, Here I am. He said, Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him for now. I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. There's a passage up above that I want to look at, and that's verse 8. As Isaac is asking, Where is the ram for the sacrifice? Abraham, my son, said, My son, God will provide the lamb. Well, we cannot ignore the fact that that has a lot to do with the foretelling of the Lamb of God, who is Jesus Christ. Just as Abraham was going to offer Isaac his son, God the Father offered his son upon the cross. And the statement that Abraham said to Isaac, God will provide. That's truly a tremendous statement to think about, because God indeed has provided the salvation through Jesus Christ. And Abraham stood the test of his faith, and the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, talks about Abraham in those days. And Sarah died at 120 years old. He was buried in a cave at Machpelah near Hebron. Abraham took her and bought a property, which was the cave of Machpelah, which is now at Hebron. And King Herod, at that time, when he was king, built a huge building over the cave. You cannot access the cave now at all, but they've built rooms dedicated to Abraham and Sarah and all the patriarchs and Joseph and the different ones that were buried there. And it's very interesting to see that this is the actual burial place of Abraham and Sarah and some of the others. Rebekah is then chosen to be Isaac's wife. I won't go into a great deal so far as chapter 24 is, except that Isaac understood that he did not want his son to have a wife from the Canaanites. He told his servant to go back to his hometown and there to find someone that his son could marry, and that God was going to point out the woman that he was to marry. So his servant went back and began to look for the wife for him. And the point is here, ancestry line continues. And that's the thing to hold in your mind. This ancestry line is now continuing toward Jesus Christ. Again, Abraham died when he was 175. And Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Quite a bit of study about that in the book of Galatians. As the analogy is made between Sarah and Hagar and Jacob and Esau, and how the children of the free woman now represents Christians today. We're sons of the free, not of the slave. And they have the two sons. As you remember, Isaac was partial to Esau, and Rebekah was partial to Jacob. Now comes some of this sibling rivalry that we read about, and the prophet was that the older would serve the younger. And as you look at this, Esau sold his birthright. The Bible gives a great deal of attention to this fact that Esau was profane. He didn't really want the birthright so much that he sold it for what we would call a pot of stew. He was hungry, and he was tricked, I guess you would say. The brothers were not on the best terms at that period of time. But he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Isaac, because he was deceived, and that's another story we'll not read, but remember that Jacob came in dressed in a fur so that his father would think he was Esau, and he was going to give the family blessing, which was important in those days, and Isaac gave that to Jacob, not to Esau. Well, Jacob fled because Esau was wanting to kill him, and Esau took a Canaanite wife. And that began the descending of Esau down into complete idolatry. We read about the Edomites that came from Esau, and they were always enemies of Israel, though for a period of time, Jacob and Esau became friends again. Jacob's life is something that you think about. He had a dream in chapter 28, and he saw angels descending and ascending, descending and ascending on the ladder. And knew that this was the place of God. He named it Bethel, which means house of God. So Jacob marries Leah and Rachel. And there's a lot there that, again, we won't go into and read all of that. But there was a lot of deception involved in that, because he wound up thinking he was going to marry Rachel when actually he married Leah first. He worked 7 years for Rachel, he thought, and then he had Leah instead, and then he worked another 7 years for Rachel. And Leah was always sort of a sad lady because she knew that she was not loved like Rachel was loved. Then we began to look at Jacob's children. Without going into great detail, again, this is important because of the tribe of Judah through whom the Christ is going to come. So again, we look at the ancestry of this. Leah had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, and a daughter named Dinah. Zilpah, who was Leah's handmaid, and they were trying to help God in a way that they shouldn't have. And Leah gave her handmaid to Isaac, or to Jacob, and had Gad and Asher. Then Bilhah was Rachel's handmaid. She was in on it too. She was trying to help God along because she didn't have any children. It was Dan and Naphtali. And then finally Rachel had Joseph and Benjamin. So you're talking about 12 sons and then also the daughter. Well, Jacob becomes wealthy. Now, let me mention on this. When God made the promise that you're going to become a great nation, God was making the heir prosperous because they had to be a mighty nation eventually. So God saw to it that Jacob became wealthy, and then Esau finally received him back, as that was a good thing among the brothers. Now we come down to one of those children named Joseph. Joseph was Jacob's favorite son. And we read about that. Let's go to chapter 37 just a little bit to notice that the Bible affirms that. In Genesis 37, beginning verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. The lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report to them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. So you're familiar with the coat of many colors. Well, it looks like that Joseph was a tattletale. He observed his brothers and what they're doing. He went back and told his father about that, and his brothers began to hate him. Then Joseph had two dreams that further caused his brothers to hate him. One of them was that there were 12 sheaves, and they all bowed down to the one that was his sheaf. And then another dream was the sun, moon, and stars, and they bowed down again to Joseph. Well, that just infuriated the brothers because they thought he had an ego problem. They didn't understand that God was sending these dreams for a reason. Now, further down in Genesis, we'll notice how these dreams became real as Joseph became great in the Pharaoh's household. And so these two dreams made the brothers hate him even more. And so as he was sent out by his father to bring supplies to his brothers, they captured him and threw him to a pit. Some of them wanted to kill him. This is in chapter 37, beginning verse 19. And they finally decided to sell him into slavery. So when the slave trade came by, they sold him into slavery. And again, that is trying to get rid of him. But notice God's hands of providence. God is in charge of all these things. When we in our life begin to have difficulties of things that we don't know how to handle, we need to have the same kind of trust that God is in charge. God will do the best for us if we'll remain faithful. We may be tested, like Abraham was tested. We might be tested like Joseph was tested. But if we have that great depth of faith that we're supposed to have, then we'll be able to get through this and come out on the other side. And so his brothers sold him into slavery into Egypt. And the brothers told Jacob that his son was dead, that Joseph was dead. They took the tunic and they put blood on it and went back and told Jacob that Joseph had been killed by wild animals. Notice that the grief of his father was very real. Even though he was not dead, the grief that the father felt was that he had died. And so he wept sincerely because he thought Joseph was dead. But Joseph ended up as head of Potiphar's household in Egypt. Again, God was with Joseph. He's one of the greatest characters of the Old Testament. He does nothing wrong that I have seen at all in the Scriptures. He always has a heart that is good. He wants to do what God wants him to do. And when he goes into Potiphar's household, he is given responsibilities. But you understand then that something happened before. But back in chapter 35, his name was changed to Israel. That's where we get the Israelites. But then he was had a place of honor in Potiphar's house because Potiphar trusted him. And the wife of Potiphar accused him of trying to rape her. The point is that Joseph had said something, and I want to look at this in chapter 39. He says something that is so wonderful, and I thought many times, I don't know what his mother taught him or what his father taught him. But he had a sense of morality that in no way was going to be destroyed. In chapter 39, beginning with verse 9, it says, "There was no one greater in the house than I." This is Joseph talking. "Nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. So it was, when she saw that he left his garment in hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought in us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." And so he was arrested and put into prison because of this. And that could be enough to discourage someone that they would give up faith, but not Joseph. He continued in his faith, and he prospered in prison. The master of the prison put him in charge of all the others, and he was very good at what he was doing. While he was there, a baker and a butler was in prison that had been in Pharaoh's household, and they had dreams. And they found out that Joseph could interpret those dreams. And as they told their dreams, Joseph was able to interpret the dreams. One of them said, who was the butler, that in 3 days you're going to be lifted up and taken back into the house of Pharaoh. To the baker, he said, "The dream is that in 3 days your head is going to be removed from you and you'll be killed." And in 3 days that happened. But he told the butler, "When you're restored to your household with Pharaoh, remember me. Remember that I've helped you." And the butler forgot it for some long period of time, but he interpreted their dreams. Now Pharaoh began having dreams as well. And his magicians and all these men, they couldn't interpret the dreams. He had dreams of 7 fat cows. And they were there for 7 years. And then after that, 7 lean cows came up and devoured the fat cows. And he was bothered. It was a dream, a vivid dream, and he didn't know what it meant. Then the butler remembered Joseph, and he said, "There's someone in prison that has told us our dream." So they sent and had Joseph come out of prison into Pharaoh's household, and he told him what it meant. There was going to be 7 years of fatness, followed by 7 years of famine. And the Pharaoh made Joseph the head of his household. So Joseph told the interpretation of the dreams, and he said, "It's not for me. God is doing that." Now you go back to the book of Hebrews again. It talks about the fact that in earlier times, men by dreams and visions would understand the will of God. But now then that God spoke directly with Jesus, and he was giving him the message that we should follow. Well, Joseph then is second in command in Egypt. And God, Pharaoh had promoted him over everything except unto Pharaoh himself. Here's the ironic part that really touches your heart. The famine was also in the land of Canaan. And so Joseph's father and his brothers were in trouble. And they come down to Egypt to buy grain because everybody knows there's a lot of grain down in Egypt. But they don't recognize him. He returns their money after they buy the grain, and keep Simeon until they bring back Benjamin. Now, he knew that Benjamin was also loved by his father, and they were afraid. They didn't know what was going on. But see, this is in God's providence. And what was happening is they were going to show that the dreams that Joseph had in his youth came true. So they return then with Benjamin to buy grain, and Joseph reveals himself to them. Let's go to chapter 45. This is one of the most touching things you'll find in the Scripture. You see, as second under command of Pharaoh, Joseph could have put them all to death. They never had he had the heart of vengeance. They sold him into slavery. All these years he couldn't see his father and his brothers. And he had complete power. He could put them to death if he wanted to. And they were afraid that's what he was going to do. In chapter 45, beginning of verse 1, then Joseph could not restrain himself before all who stood by him, and he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" Can you see that emotion in that? He hadn't had any news of his father all those years. "Does my father still live?" Brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. See, they knew what they had done to him. Now he was able to do that to them, and they didn't know what he was going to do. Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." So they came near. Then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." He saw God's providence. Now that's a lesson for us. Providence is not something that is clearly revealed in every instance in our lives. I think you understand providence by looking backwards sometimes as you see what has happened in your life and how God has blessed you. And I do believe in the providence of God. The reason why is I believe in prayer. We're not having miraculous answers to prayer in our day. But if you believe in the providence of God, you can believe in prayer because God will answer prayer through the natural means of life, not necessarily by a miracle. But if you believe that God answers prayers, then you have to believe in the providence of God and that God will respond to your prayers. And Joseph has revealed them, and he said, Do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. And that's such a wonderful understanding that Joseph had about that. And when Pharaoh's wife tried to seduce him, he said, "I cannot do this thing." Now, when I've gone off in meetings, and I sometimes use Joseph as an example, we have a lot of young people sometimes in the audience, I use this as an example that young people need to learn that when you get a car, when you're able to go out on your own, you're going to have all kinds of temptations arise. You're going to be with crowds that you shouldn't do what they're doing. You'll be with girls in a car. You have to be careful not to fall into that lust. And I use Joseph as an example because when he was tempted, he said, "I cannot do this thing." We need to learn to be able to say that in our own life. When temptations arise, say, "I cannot do this thing." You might have a desire to do it, but you have to say, "I cannot." And that's the good lesson that comes from Joseph. And he sends wagons to Jacob, and 70 souls, including his father, comes. In chapter 46, beginning of verse 1, I'll read a few verses. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "I am here." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will surely also bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father, Jacob, their little ones, and their wives, and the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. So they took their livestock and the goods which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Then he gives the names of all of these. But he says on further down that there were 70 souls altogether. 70 souls went down into Egypt. Now here's where your promises come in again. I'm going to make of you a great nation. Well, 70 people went down into Egypt. 40 years later, when they come out, there are at least 1 million or maybe 2 million people. They prospered even though they're in slavery during this period of time. God keeps His promises. And this is, as you read the Old Testament, you see these things come to life. And I believe in the promises of God. That's where you put your trust as well. God has promised us heaven. He's promised us paradise. And there's never been a time when God has gone back on what He's promised. The history of the Bible is always that God is faithful. And that's what we look for now. So 70 souls went down into Egypt. Joseph's family settles in Goshen. I don't know that we know exactly where that is, but it was a place in Egypt. And all of Joseph has all the money and the land, and the people gave him the grain, so he protects his family. He's wealthy at this point. He can take care of all of his family, and like you said, God sent him there to preserve his family. So Israel now, Jacob, now called Israel, makes Joseph promise to take his body out of burial, for burial out of Egypt. And that's a matter of faith as well. You see, he believed that God had told him that you're going to go into Egypt, but you'll come out. And because he believed that, he said, when you leave Egypt, you take me with you. And of course, they did that later when he died and buried him in the cave of Machpelah as well. And so Israel blesses Joseph and all his sons. As a patriarch of the family, he gave them blessings, which were not incidental. The blessings of the patriarch in that point were important things that came from God as he blessed his sons. Israel died and then is buried. In chapter 50, we're getting to the close of the book of Genesis. Let's notice chapter 50, beginning of verse 1. Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. Now when the days of mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back. And Pharaoh said, go up and bury your father as he made you swear. And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as the house of Joseph, his brothers, his father's house, unto their little ones, their flocks, and their herds, that left in the land of Goshen. There went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and was a very great gathering. Then they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. When the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, this is a deep mourning of the Egyptians. Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan, buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite, as property for a burial place. And after he had buried his father, he returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all who went up with him to bury his father. So Israel is buried. Now then, his father's gone. His brothers are there. And they think, now my father's gone, now he's going to really get us. And so look at verse 18. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we are your servants. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive. Now therefore do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. Joseph said to his children, "I am dying. But God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which you swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you. You shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Comment I want to make about that is that he had long sight. He wasn't short-sighted. It was going to be 400 years before the people left the land of Egypt. But he believed in the promises of God. He never wavered in his faith. Now then, how far off is heaven from us? How many years is it going to be before Jesus returns? And how many years until the resurrection? We don't know. But we need to be long-sighted like Joseph. We need to recognize that God has promised us a resting place in paradise when we leave this world. He's promised us that those who are in the Lamb's Book of Life are going to be carried to heaven at the resurrection day. We need to have this same long-sightedness in our faith that we're going to do what it is that God said He will do, and have that faith that carries me through every day. We're not in the service of Christ for just a week or two. This is something that is our lifetime calling. And I look back at Joseph and I see so many things to admire, so many things to imitate, that if we just have that faith of Joseph, number one, even though my brothers did evil to me, I'm not going to do evil back to them. He had a kind heart. And he saw God's hand of providence in the fact that God sent him to Egypt for a purpose, to save his family. And then when it came to the fact that he was finally going to die, he said, "You're going to leave this, and when you leave this land, when you do, take my bones with you." He believed that that time was coming when they would leave Egypt. And so the lessons for us are many when you look through the book of Genesis and look at the lives of the patriarchs.